Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, a bullish President Biden forging ahead with his agenda with or without Republicans. Plus, the suspect in the Colorado mass shooting making his first court appearance as his attorneys talk about a mental illness. Are they really preparing an insanity defense? And breaking news, at least five deaths reported tonight after a tornado tears through a community and the threat ongoing at this hour. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, Biden emboldened the president using his first news conference to make it clear that he is plowing ahead with his plans and he will do it with or without Republicans.
My Republican colleagues are going to have to determine whether or not we want to work together, or they decide that the way in which they want to proceed is to decide to divide the country, continue the politics of division.
So his next big agenda item, another multi-trillion-dollar spending bill, multi meaning this time $3 trillion.
The next major initiative is to rebuild the infrastructure, both physical and technological infrastructure of this country, so that we can compete and create significant numbers of really good paying jobs.
$3 trillion, and it includes a wide, wide range of things, everything from daycare to pipelines, hugely ambitious in its scope. In fact, historians likening Biden's push to change America to the transformations made by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And Biden is making it clear that these ideas are not negotiable. Today, he said that if Republicans block him, he can get around this whole filibuster issue and pass his agenda anyway. So he talked about reforming the filibuster, which is essentially blocking him from passing his agenda because it requires Republican votes. Here he is.
I'm going to say something outrageous. If we have to, if there's complete lockdown and chaos as a consequence of the filibuster, then we'll have to go beyond what I'm talking about.
So if there's chaos and he has to go beyond what I'm talking about, let me translate that. He would use reconciliation to pass his agenda. That means that Biden can get what he wants with a simple majority, without any Republicans. Doesn't even have to touch the filibuster. Just use reconciliation. There you go. And Biden is now leveling these threats with confidence.
What I know I have now is I have electoral support from Republican voters. Republican voters agree with what I'm doing.
And Biden's confidence today went even further.
My plan is to run for re-election. That's my expectation.
Do you believe you'll be running against former President Trump?
Oh, come on. I have no idea. I have no idea whether it'll be a Republican Party. Do you?
Jeff Zeleny out front live near the White House tonight. And Jeff, you know, those snips that we just showed there, he has specific items. He has an agenda. He's going to do it with or without him. Had no problem, mocking Republicans. A confident and emboldened president today.
Aaron, it's clear that President Biden has the upper hand here with the Senate, and he intends to play that hand. Look, all of his years in the Senate is making him a very interesting executive. We don't often see the head of the executive branch sort of treating the legislative branch like this, but it's been fascinating to watch the early months of the presidency. And the president made clear today he plans to continue that. He believes he does have bipartisan support. Never mind the votes. He doesn't need them for now. But he does believe he has Republican support out in the countries. That was certainly true on the COVID relief bill. And he's talking about that big infrastructure plan. We're talking about physical infrastructure like building roads and, you know, improving airports, as well as different kinds of infrastructure, soft infrastructure, if you will, expanding education, you know, improving American jobs. So we saw an emboldened President Biden today who, look, made clear that he is not going to be slowed by, you know, the obstruction and gridlock in the U.S. Senate. He understands the Senate very well. So the gamble here is he's essentially daring and urging some Republicans to come to him. He's not going to necessarily go to them or change his policy. And we saw him talking about 2024. Aaron, that raised the point that, yes, this is his first term, but he has much less time than that. The reality is he only has that Democratic majority, that 50-50 majority in the Senate until 2022 for sure. That's why they're pushing everything so fast. So he's basically like, come with me if you want. If you don't, you can watch my progress, because that is what his bet is. Of course, he's, you know, going to have some stumbles along the way with gun control issues. He's going to have to respond to this. Immigration, of course. But it was a fascinating look into his mind, how he's seeing his young presidency, Aaron.
Thank you very much, Jeff Zeleny. Let's go now to David Axelrod, former senior advisor to President Obama, who, of course, knows the vice president very well, and vice president at the time, Biden, now President Biden, very well, and Jamie Gangel, our special correspondent. So thanks to both. So, David, let me start with this, just because obviously you do know the context here so well. Biden talked about his forthcoming $3 trillion spending plan. Right. Making it clear he's going to do it with or without Republicans. He thinks these items matter. And the tone and tenor we heard is a reversal, right, of the drumbeat about unity working across the aisle that we heard during the campaign. So what changed, David?
Well, first of all, I think Joe Biden knows that he's going to be judged on what he can accomplish on the principal issues that concern people, which is how we get past the virus. And how we have a resurgence in our economy. And so he is pursuing those things. And interestingly, those are the two things that he can actually move forward on without Republicans, because those fiscal issues are the ones that you can deal with in a reconciliation package, which only requires a simple majority. Everything else, gun legislation, immigration, voting rights legislation, that requires that would require either doing away with the filibuster or getting 60 votes. So he not only knows that this is that where he wants to go, and this press conference was all about focusing attention on those issues that he thinks he's going to be judged by and that he thinks people care about, and also that he thinks he can accomplish. He was, you know, I just take issue with one thing from the top, Aaron. Mm-hmm. I think he was telling his supporters, and particularly progressive supporters who are urging him to do away with the filibuster, he said, basically, hey, I've been around, I can count. We don't have the votes to do away with the filibuster. We can reform it, and maybe we'll get to the point where Republicans are so outrageous that we can get 50 Democrats to go along. But right now, we don't have them. So I thought there was a dose of realism in his presentation today as well.
So Jamie, you know, Biden was asked, you know, to this point about Republicans, about his relationship with Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell had said yesterday that he's only spoken with Biden once since inauguration, and it was about Burma. So Biden was asked about that today. Here was his response.
I know Mitch well. Mitch knows me well. I would expect Mitch to say exactly what he said. But this is a matter of making sure that I would like Republican, elected Republican support. But what I know I have now is I have electoral support from Republican voters.
So, Jamie, I mean, he's making a big point of that. And they did support the COVID relief bill, right? Republican voters did. It was wildly popular. It's different than this $3 trillion spending bill in that it included direct payments. So who knows how Republican voters will see this one. Is Biden running the risk of misjudging McConnell and Republicans?
Well, I you know, to David's point about he doesn't have the votes, the other thing that Joe Biden said today was his famous quote, successful electoral politics is the art of possible. So Joe Biden knows what's possible and what's not, but he's also looking at the polls, and he does have a lot of support with registered Republicans right now. I think what you're seeing, though, is to quote something you said earlier, he was bullish today. He was confident today. And I think he knows that bread and butter issues, it's the economy, stupid, dealing with COVID. He said over and over again, he knows what his priorities are. That's what's going to be front and center. And he certainly thinks he will have the support of voters. But also be aware, he's going to be watching very carefully for 2022. and what happens in the House. And
right.
I think we'll see a balancing act there.
So, David, you know, you mentioned the filibuster issue here. And Biden said he agrees with President Obama that the filibuster is a relic of the Jim Crow era, but then said he's not ready to get rid of it. I just want to play this exchange with our Caitlin Collins.
Regarding the filibuster, at John Lewis's funeral, President Barack Obama said he believed the filibuster was a relic of the Jim Crow era. Do you agree?
Yes.
If not, why not abolish it if it's a relic of the Jim Crow era?
Successful electoral politics is the art of the possible. Let's figure out how we can get this done and move in the direction of significantly changing the abuse of even the filibuster rule first. It's been abused from the time it came into being by an extreme way in the last 20 years. Let's deal with the abuse first.
It sounds like you're moving closer to eliminating the filibuster. Is that correct?
I answered your question.
So, David, you know, what do you make of that? I mean, look, he's basically saying, I don't like it, but I will deal with what I have to deal with. And by the way, well, again, to your point, he's got reconciliation for all of these major economic bills as a separate path.
Yeah. And parenthetically, let's point out, he knows that he's going to be judged and his party is going to be judged in 2022 by the state of the economy and whether we're through the virus. Mm-hmm. And he's making a big bet that the things he's doing are going to ensure that the economy is roaring in 2022. But, you know, on the filibuster, again, I think there are 48 Democrats who appear ready or to vote for it. We know there are at least two Democrats who say they're not going to vote to do away with the filibuster. Joe Biden knows that, too. And his message is we will do what we can do. And, you know, I think that's a message that won't sit well with every progressive in the Democratic Party, because it is going to come up when these voting rights bills come up. It's going to come up when these gun bills come up. But I think he was being very straightforward about what he thinks he can accomplish.
Well, especially because, I mean, you know, look, I don't want to weigh into it, but if you get rid of it, then you can pass all the laws you want. Then the next time the other people get in charge,
exactly,
you're just going to go back and put them the way they were. I mean, it makes it impossible to have consistent policy.
He knows that, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jamie, let me ask you one other thing he said today. Mm-hmm. He went after Biden. I mean, Biden went after Trump by name a number of times, right? And he normally does not do that, not by name. He also went after the GOP as a whole, right, when he was asked if he was running in 2024, you know, sort of that mocking, will there even be a Republican Party? Let me play that again.
Do you believe you'll be running against former President Trump?
Oh, come on. I don't even think about it. I have no idea. I have no idea whether there'll be a Republican Party. Do you?
So what do you make, Jamie? It's a different tone, okay, than he had before.
Absolutely. I was struck. He was both self-deprecating at times. He said at one point, when I was in the Senate 120 years ago. But to your point, he did say former President Trump, Trump, Trump. Up until now, we've heard more, quote, the former guy. Mm-hmm. I think that this is self-confidence on his part. I think he feels that Trump is fading away, at least for now. And there was something else he said at one point. He said, I'm a very practical guy. And I think that what we saw today was he was feeling his way. He had success with the COVID relief bill. He's feeling confident about moving forward on the economy. And he was willing to take on Trump. Let's remember one thing. Donald Trump is not on Twitter anymore. One of the things that struck me today was there was no response from Donald Trump.
It is true. It is true. And of course, then there is, though, the complete dichotomy in the Republican Party. Right. They like that bill. They like those checks. But they still also there's adulation for the former President Trump. So how this plays out, it's going to be fascinating.
Right.
Thank you both very much. Sure. And next, Georgia's governor did just sign that sweeping elections reform bill, literally just moments ago as we're beginning our program. And this is as President Biden calls out Republicans for trying to limit voting access.
What I'm worried about is how un-American this whole initiative is. It's sick.
And attorneys for the suspect in the Colorado mass shooting say they need time to assess the 21-year-old's mental health. Is this their defense? The Attorney General of Colorado is out front. And Biden sets a new goal of 200 million COVID vaccine shots within his first 100 days. Breaking news, the Republican governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, just signing a sweeping elections bill after it sped through both the State House and Senate today. President Biden calling this nationwide push by Republican state legislatures to restrict voting access, quote, sick and un-American.
What I'm worried about is how un-American this whole initiative is. It's sick. It's sick. Deciding in some states that you cannot bring water to people standing in line, waiting to vote. Deciding that you're going to end voting at 5 o'clock when working people are just getting off work. Deciding that there will be no absentee ballots under the most rigid circumstances. I'm convinced that we'll be able to stop this because it is the most pernicious thing. This makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle. I mean, this is gigantic what they're trying to do. And it cannot be sustained.
Diane Gallagher is out front. So, Diane, you've been covering this very closely as the bill made its way through the legislature. Obviously, you hear what the president is saying, but what exactly does the final law say?
Yeah, so, Aaron, look, this law literally changes Georgia elections from top to bottom in almost every aspect. And not every single part of it is something that people consider to be restrictive. But there were enough elements in this bill that had activists, Democrats who were there on the floor calling this Jim Crow, calling this suppressive legislation. I want to go through some of that in there. It does add ID requirements for absentee voting. They're eliminating signature match in Georgia for absentee ballots. It also limits drop boxes, and it makes it a misdemeanor to give somebody food or drink if they're a voter waiting in line to vote. Perhaps the part of the bill that has caused the most outrage that has remained in the bill is the fact that it expands the oversight from state lawmakers and state officials over local election management. And so it gives some of these partisan officials the ability to appoint people who then can even replace local election officials. And look, Democrats in the House have basically said, we feel like this is a direct attack on the blue areas of Georgia, like here in Atlanta and Fulton County, and to that same effect, to voters of color. And that is what we're hearing from everybody really on the ground who oppose this, that it is targeted, they feel like, against voters of color, Aaron. I can tell you that we are already hearing about potential litigation that is already being thought out when it comes to this particular law. But of course, the governor, Brian Kemp, said that he felt like this would safeguard the election. And like we've heard so many other Republicans sort of alluding to that big lie that was spread by former President Trump after the 2020 election. It's going to restore confidence that was shaken by, well, conspiracy theories.
All right. Diane, thank you very much. And I want to go now to Ben Ginsburg, Republican election lawyer for four decades. So, Ben, you're Diane laying out the law, right? They're going to require ID for absentee voters instead of signature verification, misdemeanor to serve anyone food or drink or, to hand out water while they're voting. That one really is jarring. Are Republicans making a mistake with this move?
I think they are making a mistake anytime you put up barriers to people voting in a democracy, both on the policy grounds, because it's anti the way the country should work, but also politically, because it paints Republicans as truly not wanting people to vote. And that turns off a large chunk of the Republican base as well. But there are parts of this bill that are being oversold. The voter ID requirements, for example, get rid of signature matches, which is a really messy process, and puts in social security numbers or driver's licenses. Well, that's what California, New Jersey, and Virginia, Democratic states, use. So parts of this is being overblown.
Right. And I know you've also pointed out, sort of restricting the amount of time for early voting. Their restrictions would actually put them in line with very large Democratic states, including California, correct? So there's parts of it that make sense and parts that truly don't and are incredibly restrictive. You know, so and those parts that are very restrictive are actually now in, you know, hundreds of bills across the country. 250 bills all in 43 states are now up for discussion that would restrict voting. So President Biden, you heard him say that overall this push by Republican state legislatures is, quote, un-American. Would you agree with that characterization?
Well, I think it is really bad anytime you try and stop people from voting. And there are bills that have been filed that are really harmful to the democracy, harmful to the Republican Party in the long run. So there is this drive to change laws, to make them more restrictive, based on the unproven charge of fraudulent voting is a bad result for, I think, policy and politics for the Republican Party.
Ben, thank you very much. I always appreciate your time, your thought, nuance.
Thanks,
thank
Aaron.
You. And next, the Colorado mass shooting suspect making his first court appearance today, as prosecutors say more charges against the 21-year-old could be coming. The Attorney General of Colorado is out front, and Biden ups his goal to 200 million vaccinations by his 100th day in office. But is his administration's messaging breaking through? All of the misinformation now out about vaccines. New tonight, the suspected gunman in the Boulder, Colorado supermarket massacre denied bond as he faces a judge for the first time. It came as officials warn more charges against him are likely. Kyung Lah is out front.
Handcuffed and in a wheelchair from a gunshot wound to his right thigh, Ahmed Al-Issa appeared for the first time as defendant. The 21-year-old sat alert as a judge read his rights in the courtroom.
Sir, do you understand those rights as I've explained them to you this morning? We need you to answer out loud, please.
Yes.
That was the only time he spoke in his 10-minute hearing. He is charged with 10 counts of murder for the 10 innocent lives lost at the store. Prosecutors also filed an 11th charge of attempted first-degree murder for Officer Richard Steidel. Officer Steidel, one of the first responding officers at King Superstore, described being shot at by the gunman in the arrest affidavit as he saw fellow officer Eric Talley fatally wounded.
We will be filing additional charges in the next couple weeks.
The Boulder County District Attorney says those charges will come after investigators, still at the scene today, finish collecting all the evidence. The public defender indicated a possible future defense.
We cannot begin to assess the nature and depth of Mr. Alisa's mental illness until we have the discovery from the government.
Mental illness and school years filled with being bullied for being Muslim, according to Alisa's brother, who saw him growing increasingly paranoid. His attorneys today did not discuss his current mental state.
What sort of state is he in right now?
I have a roof on it.
A law enforcement source tells CNN investigators are scrubbing through his social media presence, among them posts like this one, where he complained, "If these racist Islamophobic people would stop hacking my phone and let me have a normal life, I probably could." Across Boulder, memorials to remember the victims and 10 families unable to grasp the loss, including the sister of Officer Talley.
My mother called me and she was just screaming. And she said his daughter had called her, his young daughter, and said, "Nana, daddy's dead. Like, this is not okay. Like, it's not okay that I'm burying my brother."
In an act to mark the end of Officer Talley's watch, the Boulder Police Department used the fallen officer's handcuffs to formally place the shooting suspect into custody, tweeting this, "Though this was a small gesture, we hope it is the start of the healing process that so many of us need at this time." Late today, the Boulder Police Department announced that the funeral for Officer Talley will be on Tuesday. And much as they have shared their grief with this community, that funeral ceremony will be live streamed to the public. And we should mention, Aaron, that the suspect in court, he did not enter a plea. Prosecutors are already warning this community that this is going to be a lengthy court process. Aaron?
Young, thank you. Out front now, the Democratic Attorney General of Colorado, Phil Weiser. And Attorney General, I appreciate your time tonight. You know, on so many levels, this appears to be a pretty straightforward case. A lot of eyewitnesses, security camera footage in the supermarket, we'd presume as well. Last night, Governor Polis told me, I think there's a lot out there. I don't think it'll be too hard to prove. That was his quote. Do you agree?
You never want to take cases for granted. There's going to be a lot of investigation here. It's important that it be thorough. The trial is going to be a point of the community getting this story. And the district attorney here in Boulder is a true professional. It'll be a thorough investigation. I'm confident they're going to touch every base they have to. A lot of other law enforcement authorities, including our office, is working with them. So it's going to be comprehensive. It's going to be done right. And it's important for the community here in Boulder that they get this process, this trial, and the justice that people here deserve.
So one of the suspect's lawyers, Daniel King, also represented the gunman in the 2012 Aurora movie theater massacre. 12 people were killed there, of course, as you well know. Now, that gunman pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. That plea did not work. He is now going to spend the rest of his life behind bars, right? That is how it ended that time. Ultimately, do you think an insanity defense would be unsuccessful here as well?
What people may not fully appreciate, and it's important to understand, the insanity defense is a very difficult standard to meet. And as you noted in the Aurora shooting case, the defendant there was not able to meet it. It is an exceptional situation when it's met. What we have here is a team that's going to do a great job making the case. That defense is going to be up to the defendant to be able to show it. It's not an easy standard to make, and rarely is it successful.
So I want to play something that Governor Polis told me last night about how this mass shooting is affecting him. He'd been to this supermarket many times before. Here he is.
To have 10 people killed at a place that I've been to, that almost every member of the community knows, has been to, drives past. This is kind of everywhere USA. This could be any grocery store, anywhere, anytime. And I think that's really why this has struck a chord, not just with residents of Boulder and of Colorado, but with people across the country.
An eyewitness that day told me, you know, he felt his bubble had burst in Boulder. And obviously it's an incredibly safe and tight-knit community. The DA today says he's confident that the trial can be held in Boulder, that there will be an impartial jury in Boulder. Do you think that that's true, or do you think that perhaps it should be done outside?
I think it's important for this community, and you can see behind me the people who are mourning, who are grappling with what is something that people didn't think could happen. And what you said is right. If it can happen here, it can happen anywhere. And I, too, like the governor, have been to this supermarket, have been to the shopping center. It is deeply disturbing, and it's important for Boulder to have a way to heal that breach, have a trial held in Boulder to bring this killer to justice, to get the story out there and give people some sense of closure and some sense of understanding. We're never going to heal the holes in our hearts. The people we've lost, it is so painful. But a trial here in Boulder is the right thing to do, and we're going to do all we can to make that happen.
Attorney General, before I let you go, Ark Young Law just reported about the handcuffs that belonged to Officer Talley. Officer Talley, of course, the first there, the hero, father of seven, and he died trying to save others in that supermarket. The Boulder Police Department said that those handcuffs that I'm showing everyone were the ones used when the suspect was taken into custody after he was discharged from the hospital. What was your reaction when you learned this?
What we need to understand about Officer Talley is this is what responsible, trusting, and meaningful policing is doing. When I talk to law enforcement professionals, this is what they sign up to do. They sign up to go into danger, to risk their lives, to leave their kids without a father because they believe in protecting the communities they serve. Officer Talley, like Officer Goodman, who we heard about in the January 6th attack of the Capitol, represents the law enforcement that we deserve and that we need. And having as many ways to remember him as a blessing, as inspiration, is going to be meaningful. When we have an memorial service for him, I know it's going to be powerful in this community. We owe him an incredible debt. He died a hero, and his family, his seven kids, they're going to be in our hearts.
He saved so many lives. Attorney General, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And next, Biden setting a new goal of 200 million vaccinations in his first 100 days. But are the vaccine skeptics drowning out some of the science on vaccines? And breaking news this hour, at least 5 deaths reported after a tornado touches down in Alabama. And we are now getting up close video of that twister. New tonight, President Biden doubling his administration's vaccine goal after already meeting the initial target of 100 million shots.
Today I'm setting a second goal, and that is we will, by my 100th day in office, have administered 200 million shots in people's arms. That's right, 200 million shots in 100 days. I know it's ambitious, twice our original goal, but no other country in the world has even come close, not even close, to what we are doing. And I believe we can do it.
Out front now, former White House medical advisor under President George W. Bush, Dr. Jonathan Reiner. So, Dr. Reiner, 200 million shots in American arms. If the goal is hit, you're really awfully close to herd immunity because children aren't even eligible, right? So that's pretty much anyone who wants one getting one who's, you know, allowed with the science.
Well, not quite. Don't forget that most of the vaccine to date are two-shot vaccines. So 200 million shots is, subtracting out the J&J vaccines, about 100 million people. So we still have a good way to go. Right now, we're giving vaccine at about 2.5 million shots per day.
Yeah.
Roughly split half and half between first and second shots and whatever J&J shots are going in now. So in order for us to get to herd immunity, even at this rate, it's still probably going to take about 5 months, assuming we can convince, you know, fully 70% of the population to take the shot. The administration is doing a great job at accelerating this, but they have a history of basically announcing a goal that they've already achieved just by math with 34 more days left in the first 100 days at 2.5 million shots per day. He'll get to the goal. So that's pretty much baked in already.
Right, right. Exactly. And I mean, you know, look, I get why they would want to set a goal that they can meet.
Yeah.
But your point is really important, right? That's not ramping anything up. Now, he had previously set May 1st as a deadline for when all adult Americans in every single state were eligible for the vaccine and said there'd be enough for them. So basically, if you want one by May 1st, you can go ahead and get one. Look, it's complicated because a lot of people now are eligible and still aren't getting them. You know, we see that in New York, left, right and center in Manhattan. I see it every day. And there are seven states that have still not even told CNN when they plan to start vaccinating everyone 16 and older. I haven't even laid it out. That includes New York, but also Alabama, Arkansas, Minnesota, New Jersey, Pennsylvania and Wyoming. Is there any reason in your mind why all states shouldn't just say it's open to everyone right now and drop with this whole you're 1B, 1C, whatever, which, again, what I've seen anecdotally means that a lot of people who are eligible don't know if they are and so aren't even getting it. So there's all these lines and no one's in them.
Completely agree. And the other reason to do that is probably over 70% of the transmission now is coming from younger people. You know, we saw that during the second surge over the summer. About 72% of the transmission came from people between the ages of 20 and 49. And very few of those folks have been vaccinated now. And those are the people we really need to vaccinate now. So, look, we can continue to vaccinate the people at highest risk, although we've already vaccinated with at least one shot 70% of people over the age of 65. We can continue to do that in parallel with now getting shots into lower risk people, but who are higher risk to transmit the virus. Every state should do that. Open it up. We have 40 million doses that have been delivered to states right now that have not been administered, that number is going to grow.
Yep.
So I think we should make this available to everyone.
Yep.
Couldn't agree more.
Thank you very much, Dr. Reiner, for your time, as always.
My pleasure.
And next, Biden says his expectation is to run for re-election, but he's also a, quote, respecter of fate. We'll talk about that with Biden's biographer. And breaking news, at least five deaths reported tonight as tornadoes are sweeping across the South. The threat is ongoing as I speak. We're live on the ground. Tonight, President Biden turning introspective when talking about whether he'll run for a second term.
Have you decided whether you are going to run for re-election in 2024? You haven't set up a re-election campaign yet, as your predecessor had by this time.
My predecessor needed to. My predecessor. Oh, God, I miss him.
Have you?
No, the answer is yes. My plan is to run for re-election. That's my expectation.
So is that a yes, that you are running for re-election?
Look, I don't know where you guys come from, man. I've never been able to travel. I'm a great respecter of fate. I've never been able to plan 3.5 years ahead for certain.
Up front now, Evan Osnos, CNN contributor and author of the Biden biography, Joe Biden, The Life, The Run, and What Matters Now. So, Evan, he says he's a great respecter of fate, you know, obviously informed by the tragedies in his own life, but, you know, that his plan is to run as of now, which, you know, surprised some that he came out directly and said that. What was your reaction to his answers?
Well, look, it would be political malpractice for him to say that he wasn't running now. But I think there's actually a really deeper element to this, which is he really did, a long time ago, kind of came up with his own sort of homebrew philosophy about how to deal with fate, how to think about the sheer ups and downs of his life. I mean, he decided that, as he put it, everybody has a kind of cosmic ledger. I mean, this is his words, not mine, that everybody, for all the highs of your life, there will be lows. And the highest highs are met by the lowest lows. He certainly felt it in his own life. And I think it translates into politics. In his conception, you can be riding high today, March of 2021, but you can't anticipate what's going to come around the bend, what's going to knock you down, what's going to take away that power that you thought you have, or what's going to give you an advantage over an adversary you didn't think you had today.
So, Evan, you know, he was asked about, well, how is he going to deliver on promises that he's made on a wide range of issues, right? Climate change, immigration, gun control. Let me just play his response for you.
I got elected to solve problems. And the most urgent problem faced the American people, I stated from the outset, was COVID-19 and the economic dislocation for millions and millions of Americans. The other problems we're talking about, from immigration to guns and the other things you mentioned, are long-term problems. They've been around a long time. And what we're going to be able to do, God willing, is now begin one at a time to focus on those as well.
So, Evan, he was asked a lot about immigration, right? And he had a lot of statistics. He was ready for it, right? I don't want to say that he wasn't. But those were the questions he received. His actions show that he has put Vice President Harris in charge of the border. He takes the issue seriously, but he's delegating it, okay? He's making it clear it's not where his agenda is headed. It's not what he wants to talk about.
Well, part of this is an outgrowth of his own vice presidency. Remember, that job was delegated to him, too. He dealt with the Northern Triangle issues, and he knows how hard it is. He knows it may not be solved overnight. But you know what I think is interesting, Aaron? You see him juggling very clearly the challenges of the short-term crisis, the thing you don't anticipate, with your long-term goals. So, you know, to use a president that he admired a lot, Jack Kennedy, you have to get the Cuban Missile Crisis right. But you will be judged by history on whether you do things like create the Peace Corps and create these long-standing agenda items. For him, that's infrastructure. I mean, stuff that's so politically unglamorous as getting lead out of people's homes and getting asbestos out of schools. But then also China. You know, you heard him say today that our grandchildren, as he put it, will be writing their dissertations on how we handle the long-range challenge of China. So he is trying not to drop any balls in the short term without losing sight of what he thinks are the long-range objectives for him to achieve in 4 years or 8 years.
So, okay. And he's going big, you know, because of this on so many things, Evan, right? I mean, just think about this. If he gets what he wants, which it looks like he can, regardless of the filibuster, right, he's going to have $5 trillion in spending within 100 days. I mean, it's a stunning thing. The New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd wrote the other day, and I'm sure you saw it, but let me just read it for viewers who didn't. President Biden is being hailed as a transformational, once-in-a-generation progressive champion, with comparisons to LBJ and FBR plenty. While Obama has become a cautionary tale about what happens when Democrats get the keys to the car but don't put their foot on the gas. Do you think that Biden is driven by a desire to, you know, somehow in the scope of what he accomplishes of transforming the role of government, to exceed Obama?
Well, look, the honest answer is you don't get where he is in this business without a pretty strong competitive streak. There's a piece of this, too, that he sees a lot of unfinished business, that he and President Obama, who are, after all, very close, they spent 8 years trying to get things done, some things they weren't able to do. So, sure, if he can get those things accomplished, he will. But he is also acutely conscious of the risk of high expectations. You know, we are talking these days about comparisons to FDR, to LBJ. Axios reported today that he's been meeting with historians this week to understand more of that history. And what he would tell you is it's much better to set lower expectations and over-deliver than to allow those expectations to become baked in. And then everybody says, well, why didn't you exceed LBJ?
All right. Evan, thank you very much for your perspective.
My pleasure.
And next, breaking news, officials searching for victims after reports of 9 tornadoes in Alabama. At least 5 deaths reported so far. We'll go there live next. Breaking news, search and rescue efforts are underway just outside Birmingham, Alabama, where a tornado touched down. At least 5 deaths reported so far, and as many as 50 homes are damaged that we know right now. 9 tornadoes total, at least, reported across the state. One man in the storm catching the camera danger on camera from his car, so just watch this. Incredible. I mean, just looking at that. The National Weather Service is issuing a tornado emergency warning. Nearly 35,000 people are in the current storm's path just over the next hour, right? Because this moves really quickly. They pop up, and then the damage, obviously, in property and human life can simply be immense. Derek Van Dam is out front from Birmingham, Alabama. So, Derek, what are you seeing right now?
Well, you know, interesting, Aaron, that tornado footage that you just showed on television a moment ago is the same tornado that caused the damage behind me. The National Weather Service and meteorologists at the CNN Weather Center, they provided guidance that there would be long-track, long-duration tornadoes today, and that is exactly what happened, because the footage you saw a moment ago was several miles to our south and west, where we are in Eagle Point, Alabama, just to the south and east of Birmingham. We're several miles away from where that footage is, and you can see the homes that had their roofs completely ripped off of the top of their house. People are busy cleaning up the damage. What I found very interesting about this is how indiscriminately this tornado damaged homes and communities, because it hopped and skipped over some houses, sparing them completely, but completely damaging others. We talked to some sheriffs earlier who had a mobile command center advised us that they had to halt their search and rescue operations because of the ongoing severe weather threat. But I can tell you now that the temperatures have dropped, the cold wind has ushered in, and I think the severe weather threat is starting to dwindle here in Birmingham, Alabama. A very, very welcome sign, because it has been a volatile and very turbulent and dangerous day within central Alabama. Now we focus our attention across northern Georgia, where the National Weather Service has just issued a new tornado warning, including the Atlanta metro region. Aaron.
This moves so fast. All right, thank you very much, Derek. I appreciate your time and all of yours. Anderson starts now.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.